Welcome. You're listening to the 23rd episode of the Extensive Reading Podcast, where we take an intensive look at extensive reading. This is Jose, and with me is...
Travis. Pleasure being here.
So tonight we have a... What do we have tonight? Oh, first of all, we have to say thank you. Thank you to all the people who make the Extensive Reading in Japan Journal possible.
Yeah, we had an article published in that, just introducing our podcast. Maybe... You're a new listener by means of that article. If you are, welcome.
Yeah, and thanks again to Mark Brierley, who's been here with us, and everyone else who's behind this journal.
Yeah, we're honored to be a part of it. Hope we can contribute more in the future, too.
Definitely. Let's start with tonight. We have an interview with somebody who's been promoting ER for a really long time. And that's Professor Charles Brown from Meiji Gakuin University in Tokyo. And Professor Brown has been working along with Rob Waring, who we interviewed in our last two episodes, 21st and 22nd, in creating and maintaining a website. Can you tell us about this website?
Yeah, this is ER Central. And this was actually introduced, if you've been listening, like Jose said, by Rob Waring, but I think Dr. Brown really gets into the nitty-gritty and gives us a lot of details on the different services and the different features of this website and how it could be useful for you and your students alike, so both teachers and students. And there's a lot of graded material that students can read.
And listen to.
Yeah, so it's really fantastic, I think. And... I won't spoil any more of it for you. I'll let him explain it. He does a much better job than I do, both explaining the website and just giving a really good pitch on why extensive reading is necessary. So.
So my idea would be to ask you what your background is and how you ended up doing extensive reading or promoting extensive reading. And then after that, what I would like you to do is to introduce the website to our audience. And then in addition to that, we can talk about word lists or ERM vocabulary and or anything else.
Does that sound... Okay, well, that's a big ball of wax. I think I've probably been involved with extensive reading and promoting extensive reading probably longer than most people in Japan. I'm just not as well known about it. So I'm sort of a behind the scenes promoter of extensive reading. I've been in Japan since 1985. I worked as the first national chairman of the JET program, which is a program that, you know, invites on average about 6,000 teachers a year to work in junior and senior high schools around Japan. And so I've been doing, you know, just since those days and up until today, you know, a lot of teacher training and, you know, working in any way I can to try and improve English education, especially at junior and senior high school level. At my present position, I'm a professor of applied linguistics at Meiji Gakuin University. At that school, I'm in charge of the teacher training program. So most of my students are trying to become certified junior and senior high school teachers. And, you know, from the 80s, you know, from the mid 80s, I've been, you know, sort of pushing extensive reading and extensive listening as something that really solves a lot of the fundamental problems of English education in Japan. And I would think that, you know, if I think about where it started for me, it was probably even in my undergraduate days, about 6 months before I came to Japan. I wasn't certified as an English teacher yet. I was just majoring in English literature. I just was coming on the JET program. So, you know, I thought, well, gee, I better learn something about teaching. And I took a course in a graduate school of education. And in the mid 80s, the person that was very, very, you know, popular at the time was Stephen Krashen. And, you know, the idea of, you know, comprehensible input and the natural approach and the affective filter hypothesis and all of these things. And I just absorbed it like a sponge absorbs water. I mean, I just really, a lot of these things made a lot of sense to me. And when I got to Japan and I started working on the JET program, I was in charge of 53 junior high schools my first year. So every single day I was working with a different junior high school and probably five or six different teachers in a single day. So hundreds of teachers in a year. And what I saw was, really not very good. Most of the teachers couldn't speak English well. When they taught English, they tended to teach in Japanese. They tended to focus on the teaching and memorization of grammar. They had a very accuracy-based approach, and this had a very negative effect on students. And this is very much in contrast to what I learned in college, which is that, according to the principles, of what Stephen Krashen tried to put forward, is that learning a second language should be kind of effortless. You know, if you give students material, if you give them reading material and listening material that's at their level, at their I+1 level, you know, if their level is here, you know, the I+1 level is just a little bit above. If they, you know, and you know, since I became a, you know, sort of a specialist in vocabulary acquisition, I could actually quantify I+1 as being 95% to 98% coverage of the words on the page. But if you could give students, you know, materials at the I+1 level, then they wouldn't have all of those negative feelings. They wouldn't lose their confidence and motivation because the materials were too hard, which is exactly what I was seeing in junior and senior high schools. So as the national chairman for the JET program, I was pushing extensive reading and extensive listening with teachers in boards of education around the country as a way to sort of counterbalance what was going on in the classroom. And later on, I worked for various Ministry of Education, Monbu Kagakusho committees, including the Textbook Committee and Teacher Training Committee and JET Program Oversteering Committee. And, you know, that was really one of the things that I, you know, there were several things, but that was one of the things that I kept on harping on, is that the level of the reading materials was too hard. When I went back to school in the 90s and got my master's and PhD, I started studying under Paul Nation, a vocabulary specialist, and I really became even more aware of the problem in Japan, and did some, I think, our landmark studies on the difficulty of Japanese high school reading materials. And what I found was that Japanese ministry-approved textbooks, high school textbooks, are often actually more difficult than materials that native speakers read. So it's, in a sense, the quantification I was finding was that in terms of vocabulary difficulty, it's actually easier to open up Time Magazine or Newsweek or Japan Times or Harry Potter than it is to try and read a Japanese high school textbook made for second language speakers of English. And that really, you know, got me on my way. And I, you know, as I said, I've been pushing extensive reading all of these years, but I really went in a slightly different direction. As much as I was pushing extensive reading and extensive listening, because of my work under Paul Nation, I really, really became, enamored with the idea of identifying the most important high frequency words in the English language. Because what the research shows is that, you know, you need, you know, really, if you want to get to 98, 99% coverage, you need, you know, if you don't know what you're doing, you need, you know, 8,000, 10,000 words. And what I, you know, an average native speaker, the average educated native speaker of English who's graduated from college knows 20 to 30,000. And those numbers are just too high for what we're finding in Japan. I mean, Japanese students, Japanese college students, after studying English for, you know, 12 years, you know, elementary school, junior high, senior high, and college, after 12 years, their average vocabulary size is only 2,000 words, which is less than 5% of what a native speaker knows. So clearly, the words that they're studying are the wrong words. They're studying low frequency words for entrance examinations. They're exposed to texts that are too hard. And all of this is leading to a very, you know, negative spiral. And so what I wanted to do is to try and create a positive spiral. And I thought the starting point should be vocabulary. So that's why I created these word lists, a series of five or six word lists, the first one known as the new general service list, which with just anywhere between 2,000 and 4,000 words can get students up to 95 to 98% coverage. You know, so with a fraction of the number of the words that a native speaker knows, you're getting enough words to be able to read easily, which is what Krashen talks about, that I+1 level. And for me, I+1 is the level where you can read without the help of a dictionary and without the help of a teacher. So, you know, and this is called independent learning. And to get students to the place where they can be independent learners, where they don't need dictionaries and they don't need teachers, you know, they either need 8,000 or 10,000 words if they don't know what they're doing, or they can study one of my word lists and do it with, you know, 2,000 or 3,000 or 4,000 words, which is much more manageable, much more closer to what their current level is. And so I think, to me, and we can get into this more later if you want to ask questions about it, I think that the study of high frequency vocabulary on the one hand, and the doing of extensive reading and extensive listening on the other hand, they're very, very complementary activities. They're very symbiotic activities, because the strengths of one, you know, learning high frequency vocabulary via flashcards, for example, has some strengths in terms of efficiency, but weaknesses in terms of decontextualization, whereas extensive reading has lots and lots of context, but the weakness is that it's incredibly slow. It's an incredibly slow way to develop vocabulary knowledge. So if you do them together, they kind of help each other and complement each other. So I came to ER Central, and I came to this idea of creating this website, and I came to working with Rob Waring because we both believe in both things, the extensive reading and vocabulary acquisition. I tend to be stronger or more well-known in vocabulary acquisition, and Rob tends to be more well-known in extensive reading, but we both believe in the other. And we try to put our heads together to try and make this website in a way that would help learners to do both of those things.
Yeah, I really like what you said. I think many people try to push for, I don't know, explicit learning or more implicit learning. But right. I totally agree that you need both, and that they don't have to be competing forces, but they can support each other.
No, they actually have to. They're not competing forces at all.
Yeah.
If you know the research on extensive reading, if we put a more of a fine point on it, on incidental learning. You know, when you try and when you do a lot of reading, you are exposed to vocabulary incidentally. The focus in true extensive reading, the focus is not on vocabulary learning. The focus is on reading.
That's right.
And when the focus is on reading and you're reading and that's the focus of your activity, you learn vocabulary incidentally. But incidental learning means that you need to be exposed to a new word, not once, not twice, not five times, but the research shows anywhere between 15 and 30 times you need to be exposed to a single word before it actually becomes part of your active memory. So that's extremely slow. That's extremely slow. I mean, imagine, you know, if you wanted to learn the word rambunctious, How often, how much, how many pages of text do you think you would have to read to be exposed to the word rambunctious 30 times? You know, it might take years, right?
Right.
You know, literally. So extensive reading, for all of its merits, and there are the list of merits of extensive reading is it just goes on and on and on. One of its demerits is that vocabulary learning is very, very slow. Whereas if you go over on the other side, if you take a word list of high frequency words and you try and learn them via flashcards using a spaced repetition system, you can master hundreds of words in a month. You can master thousands of words in just several months. So master is not the right word, but you can develop at least receptive knowledge of hundreds, if not thousands of words in a very, very short period of time with a spaced repetition learning system. The problem, though, with learning words via these spaced repetition flashcard systems is it's decontextualized learning. So you know the word and you know the meaning, but you don't know how, you don't know its collocates, you don't know how it occurs in context, you don't know the patterns that occur with that word. And so to learn those things, you need to go to extensive reading, extensive listening. So that's what I'm saying is that they're extremely complementary activities. The main weakness of the other of each one is offset by the strength of the other.
Yeah, the other, yeah.
Okay, can I ask a question for the vocabulary acquisition specialist? As you were saying that, I was thinking of the 9 aspects of what it is to know a word, and I think
9? No, it's like more like 20.
Well, I was thinking of. I think it was Paul Nation who put this in an article.
It might be. Yeah.
9 no, aspects Paul of Nation. Knowing a word.
Of what it is to know a word. When you learn a new word, you have to know. You have to know its syntax. You have to know its collocations. You have to know its basic meaning. And I can't really remember well. And I'm not sure if it was Paul Nation who put this.
You're on the right track.
I definitely know that Schmidt. Norbert Schmidt would give this reference, and there's people like Michael Lewis with the lexical approach who would advocate
right.
for teaching all these aspects to students, and I'm just wondering,
yes.
wouldn't it be in terms because we don't have that much time and because students don't have that much time. Wouldn't it be wiser for students just to learn just one aspect of these words, which is, or maybe two aspects, the pronunciation and some basic meaning, and then to gather all the rest through
incidental
learning and exposure?
The answer is yes. I think that's the approach I mostly espouse. Paul Nation in his earliest book, I think it's 1990 by Heinle and Heinle, Teaching Learning Vocabulary, actually identifies 21 or 22 aspects of knowing a word. I think it's been simplified into categorized. He's categorized those 20 aspects into maybe 9. But there's a whole bunch, and I've written articles for. There's one in the Encyclopedia of Applied Linguistics by Routledge. I have a chapter in that book on what does it mean to know a word, and so there's, if you look at the different researchers, there are literally dozens of aspects of what it means to know a word, and the general spectrum, of these. 20 or 21 aspects, if you talk about Paul Nation's, generally are put on a spectrum from receptive knowledge to productive knowledge, where, receptive knowledge might be, sort of understanding the meaning of the word, understanding the spelling of the word, recognizing it, and so on. Whereas productive aspects, which would usually generally come much later, would be, knowing how to pronounce it, knowing how to use it in a sentence, knowing how to use it in speaking and so on, speaking and writing. But for me, because I've spent so much time working on trying to improve English education in Japan, and because I'm so aware of the weaknesses that Japanese students have in their knowledge of core foundational high frequency vocabulary, I tend to very strongly espouse what you were just referring to earlier. And that is to begin with at least one aspect of knowledge of every single high frequency word. I would say that it's a very important first step for low to intermediate level learners to get at least receptive knowledge of every single high frequency word, but not to stop there. And so I'm not espousing stopping there, but I'm saying that until you have at least a receptive knowledge of the first, 4,000 to 5,000 high frequency words, depending upon your purpose for learning, whether it's academic English or business English or test English or whatever, until you're up to about 4,000 to 5,000 words where you have 95% to 98% coverage, you should be focusing first and foremost on filling in the gaps of any word that you don't know among those high frequency words receptively. But over time, all of those other aspects need to be developed. So you do need to develop productive knowledge. You need to be able to pronounce the word. You need to be able to spell the word. You need to be able to use it in a sentence and so on. And those are extremely important too, but those can be done over time. Another aspect of word knowledge is also automaticity. Our brains are kind of like RAM memory in a computer, especially short-term memory. And we only have the capacity to be able to process a certain amount of knowledge. And so these high-frequency words, if your knowledge of the high-frequency words is very light, if you only have receptive knowledge and you need time to remember what it means, you end up focusing all of your time trying to process these high-frequency words, and you don't have enough memory left over to process the difficult grammar and difficult low-frequency words. So what you need to do is you need to constantly be working at vocabulary so that your high-frequency knowledge becomes automated. So it becomes, according to Krashen, acquired knowledge as opposed to learned knowledge, so that it's like instantaneous. And when it's instantaneous, you don't need any RAM power. You don't need any brain power to process it, and you have more RAM available to process new words. And this is very related to developing reading skills. So if you're, one of the reasons Japanese students have so much difficulty reading is because they have not developed automatized knowledge of high frequency vocabulary. So when they read, they're not able to decode the language quick enough. And this also goes to when they watch movies. When you watching movies, they don't have enough knowledge of English to be able to process what's going on in the audio part and the visual part of the movie, because they're so focused on the transcripts. Yeah, yeah. So until some of this knowledge becomes automated, it's just too difficult of a task.
Well said. Well said.
So
how does your site fit into this? How are you fixing the problem?
Well, in a lot of ways. I mean, the site is not, this is not the, a perfect site. It's not the perfect approach, but basically what this site is, it represents Rob Waring's and my attempt to try and give back to our field. We both worked very hard in the areas of vocabulary and extensive reading, and we're out there presenting, we're out there publishing, we're out there talking about this stuff. But we also know that the teachers and students don't have a lot of money, and they need to be able to have access to materials at their level that doesn't cost money. And so Extensive Reading Central, ER Central, that's the main purpose of this site, is to and to put together lots and lots of graded materials that's carefully graded and put together in a way that students can use it, that teachers can watch students use it, and that basically they can have the benefit of I+1 input no matter what their level is. And I'm thinking in Japanese, kabes, one of the walls, one of the obstacles that anybody who's doing extensive reading has is that if you're using extensive reading materials by publishers, almost every publishing company has a different scale. So level one for Longman is different than level one for Cambridge, and it's very different from level one for Penguin and Oxford. So all of these different publishers have different scales. So even if you happen to know your level on the Oxford scale, it doesn't necessarily mean that you know your level for any of the other scales. So what we've done on our website is we've taken, this is really something where Rob Waring really deserves some accolades, is that, you know, he's spent years trying to put all of these different levels on a single scale. And that single scale is published on the ERF, the Extensive Reading Foundation website. Originally, it was 16 levels, going from about zero head words to about 4,500 head words, because that's where, if you look at the published textbooks by the publishers, there's about 5,000 or 6,000 across 30 or 40 publishers. It sounds like a lot, but it's actually not that many. But the most difficult level was at about 4,500 head words, and the lowest were about 100 head words. So the original 16 levels of the ERF scale were designed for publishers' materials. But what happened is, I would say about 5-6 years ago, Norbert Schmidt and Paul Nation, working together, wrote some articles and talked about the importance of mid-level graded readers. They said that 4,500 head words is not enough, and that there's a big gap because native speakers have 20,000 to 30,000 words, and graded readers sort of drop off at 4,500. So they wrote about 10 or 12 simplified versions of public domain novels, like The Art of War by Sun Tzu and a couple of other things. And they put them out there and said, this is what we should be reading. So we realized, Rob and I realized, we needed some more levels. So we went beyond the 16 levels, and we actually extended it to 20 levels. So now the ERF scale goes up to about 20,000 words, 18,000 words, I think. I'm sorry, 18,000 words. So we go, you know, instead of to 4,500 words, go all the way up to 18,000 words. And that was really the basis for the Central website. So we have 20 levels of reading materials. We have about 1,000 free graded reading stories and several hundred free graded listening stories, all using this 20-level scale.
So you have both reading and listening on the site, then.
Yes. Wow. Right. And so the idea is, I mean, because it's the same argument for listening as well. You know, if you're at, you know, level 5 and the listening material is at level 20, it's not input.
Right.
You know,
right.
you can't understand it.
Listening
so,
pain.
So, right. So you need to get to that level where, you know, 95%. And there's good research. There's actually quite a few, you know, good articles that show that the levels are pretty similar for reading and listening. The frequency counts are a little bit different for spoken English than written English, but the percentage that's needed to understand for comprehension is very similar. So what we do is we've got, you know, about 1,000 reading stories and growing, and I would say about half that in terms of listening and growing. And what we've done is we've created, the way you go onto the website, you can just go on and play with it. But to really enjoy the website, you need to create an account. The account doesn't cost any money, but once you create an account on the website, what it does is it allows you, among other things, to rank your own level. So it's sort of a student self-assessment tool that I tried to create based on Rob's scale. So Rob has these 16 levels, which we worked together to expand to 20 levels. And what I did was I wrote simple 200 word text at every single one of those 20 levels. And what the students do is they just sort of hover over a number, level 1, level 2, level 3, and they get a text that pops up and they have to try and read it. And if they don't know, you know, one or more words in the text, then it's too hard and they have to hover downward. If they know all the words, then they hover upward. And so the idea is for the students themselves to find a level that they're comfortable at. And once they find a level they're comfortable at, they just click, you know, choose this level, And then the system will remember that that's their level and start automatically suggesting stories at that level for them.
Great.
And so we have enough stories that you know, there's usually, you know, more than, you know, several dozen stories at each level. So students can just then, you know, one of the, you know, there's all those, you know, the 8 or 10 golden rules of extensive reading. And one is reading at your level, but the other is reading material that's interesting to you. So we try very hard to have a wide range of choices of materials. And so once we know the student's level, then we really encourage students to read stories that appeal to them. So that we have a little reader inside of the website, you know, we try and put pictures into the story to make it a little bit more interesting. And then they read at that level. And one of the other things that, you know, that's maybe unique about our site compared to other graded reading sites is that we've tried to combine the graded reading with the vocabulary learning. So on the one hand, we've got graded reading going on and graded listening going on. Uh-huh. But while you are reading, if you you can click on any word that occurs in the passage, and that will pop up an HTML learner's dictionary. And that learner's dictionary, Rob and I spent more than 5 years creating from scratch, so that all of the definitions are written in extremely easy English with controlled vocabulary. So if the, you know, if the student's level is 500 words, the words in the definition are going to be relatively, you know, mostly only using those words. So it's a very controlled dictionary database. And so the students will click on a word they don't know, the definition pops up, and then inside of the definition box, there's a little button where students can click to add that word to their vocabulary learning list. So, okay. So what happens is that students are creating their own vocabulary learning list from the stories they are reading, from the words that they don't know. So it's a very personalized list of high frequency vocabulary that they don't know. So it's rather than, you know, giving a test and trying to guess which words a student knows or doesn't know, we're literally, you know, putting it in front of students. And every time they click on a word, they have the chance to put that in a spaced repetition flashcard system and learn it.
Great.
And on the vocabulary side of things, once they have a word list, whether it's just from clicking words in the story, whether they're using one of my word lists, they can do both of those things. But once they have a list of words, they can learn via flashcards. But we also have, I think, 3 or 4 different, you know, vocabulary learning games. So we tried to use principles of gamification so that it's not just, you know, boring flashcards all the time, but there's, you know, sort of concentration, you know, type games and various other kinds of games to get them to, you know, sort of, you know, have a little bit more fun while they're trying to learn these words in a decontextualized setting.
That's, yeah, wow. Yeah, I'm just taking a look through the site right now. It looks great. I really like how you... We started the interview and you told us about kind of bringing those two ideas together of the implicit learning and then deliberate learning. And I can see how your site marries those two things together in a really integrated way.
Well, another thing I should probably mention, which I think is an important bit of work that Rob and I have done, is it's another tool that's on the website, which is called, it's a horrible name, OGTE, Online Graded Text Editor. And OGTE is basically a tool that allows teachers and authors and content writers to write materials to a specific level. So if students are on our ER site and they're at, you know, say level 10 is 1200 to 1500 words. If they have a 1200 to 1500 word vocabulary and the teacher wants to take some Japan Times articles or New York Times articles or something else, and they want to make sure that students understand 95% of that content, They just copy and paste the article into our tool, and it will highlight all the words that are out of level. Okay. And then teachers, you know, teachers are able to just very quickly simplify, you know, take out the difficult words, use synonyms or simplify the syntax. And there's just automatically, there's all these numerical tools that let the teacher know when they've hit 95%. And there's a whole bunch of other tools there as well, but that's the basic idea.
I've used the vocab profile on LexTutor. That must be really similar.
So Tom Cobb is a very good friend of mine. And Tom, I've been promoting Vocab Profile for probably 20 years. I mean, I've always promoted all of his tools. That's part of my teacher training. But one of the things, you know, there's a couple of things. I mean, you know, Tom's tool is fantastic, but it's not entirely intuitive for a non-specialist.
No.
It's, you know, Tom's tools are, you know, Vocab Profile and those other tools, they're more designed for researchers. And if you know, if you're a corpus linguist and you know what you're doing, you know, Vocab Profile is fantastic. Or if you have somebody like me who takes you through in a workshop and shows you, then it's probably okay. But if you just go there uninitiated, it's not really easy to know what to do. So basically what Rob and I try to do, it's a tribute to what Tom's done. You know, mm-hmm. we're just taking it a step further. And what we're trying, you know, what we've tried to do is to make it much more intuitive for the average teacher and the average, you know, author, you know, to be able to use without, you know, a real, you know, without being a corpus linguist. The other thing, well, Tom has all of my word lists, all of the new general service list and my five other word lists, they're all on Tom's website, but Part OGT has all of my word lists as well. It also has a lot of the other important word lists as well. So, you know, depending upon what your purposes are and what word list you're targeting, the OGTE tool might be a really good one.
Okay.
I mean, there's another tool as well. And my other friend, Lawrence Anthony, who's a, you know, works at Waseda University. He's got, you know, I can't even count how many free corpus linguistic tools he has, but he has one similar to Vocab Profile called AntWord Profiler. And that's a very good tool as well. But his is different than the one that Rob and I made and the one that Vocab Profile made, in that his is sort of designed so that you can upload your own word list. So if you have if you're not necessarily interested in using, like, say, a word list that I've made or the British National Corpus or some well-known word list, but you have a specific set of words that you're really trying to get your students to learn and you want to write materials for that specific list, then Lawrence's is pretty good. So each of the tools has a different sort of focus. They each have different strengths and weaknesses. But I think Rob and I, the tool that we've made, OGTE, is probably a very good tool for, you know, for the average teacher who wants to get into ER and wants to simplify content for their students.
Well, we'll definitely include a link to that too on our
notes. It's on the website, but please do, you know, direct link is probably a good way to go.
Just going back to the materials and the texts, where did you get them? Are they things that...
Well, It's a combination of things. We, you know, our original idea for the website was to, you know, when we started about, I guess it's probably 5 years ago, was to try and create a crowdsourced website where what we would do is we would seed it with text that we've written and we've contributed, but then we would create tools so that teachers could submit as well. And so there are tools on the website that allow teachers to submit and upload their own materials. But it's just not the crowdsourcing aspect of the website hasn't taken off as much as we had hoped. So it's really been a combination of Rob and I, combination of us writing stories and us commissioning, you know, just paying authors to write stories for the website. And then also, you know, a big part of it is that Rob and I are both pretty well connected in the ELT publishing industry, and we've each contacted publishers that we know, and publishers have made a certain number of stories available for free. The way the website, if you look at the stories closely, what you'll find, some of them have no citation at the bottom, and those are probably ones that Rob and I have written, but some of them have donated by Compass or donated by Pearson or donated by, and so there's, you know, we have gotten a lot of support from some of the major publishers, and that's very that's been very good.
Good,
that's impressive.
How, I mean, we in the past, actually a couple of times we've talked to Paul Goldberg, who does
Paul X Reading, because I'm an advisor for Paul. Yeah.
Okay, how is something like ER Central, I don't know, different or?
Oh no, each of them are different. Each of them have different strengths and minuses, pluses and minuses. I mean, I think Paul's website. I actually tried to do something similar to what Paul is doing right now about 10 years ago and just utterly failed. The publishers didn't want to work together 10 years ago. And Paul, to his credit, has been able to convince, adversaries, publishers who are working against each other for market share, to all work together and put all of these books on a single website. And I think that's amazing. But what Paul has got is basically publisher created content. Mm-hmm. And publisher created content is a very important part of extensive reading. But the readers that are created by Cambridge or Oxford or Penguin and so on, they tend to be much longer in length. They tend to be, some of the longer ones are 60 to 80 pages, right? What we've created at ER Central is the exact opposite of that. What we thought about is, what length of text might a student be willing to read on a train? And so we're going from, the long texts that we have might be 1,000 or 1,500 words, and the short ones might be, 50 or 75. But what we've tried to do is to create very short, concise, extensive reading content that where the numbers, extensive reading means reading a lot, extensive.
Yeah, yeah.
The extensive numbers come not from reading, one full length novel, but from reading, 50 or 75 short stories at your level. And so the idea is just to get them coming back again and again and again and reading every day. Material that's interesting to them at their level. And I would say that, a good college extensive reading program should have a combination of all of these. It should have a free website like ER Central. It should have a paid online extensive reading site like X Reading. It should have physical textbooks in the library, which is what we do. We have about 5,000 or 6,000 books in our library, and we require all freshmen and sophomores to read, certain number of books per semester, certain number of pages per semester.
At
Meiji Gakuin, yeah. Yeah. And so that's a very important part of the freshman and sophomore curriculum for our English department. There are other sites as well. I mean, there's a good number of them. Another friend of mine, Joe Polshock, has a website called BOASIS, which also has, paid, online extensive reading content. And I think that, having a number of options and a range of choices and lengths and focuses is very important because, part of extensive reading is choice. Giving students stuff not just at their level, but giving them lots and lots of interesting, choices. I mean, it's not even just that they're interesting. That's part of it, that, to give them a range of interesting choices. But another part of the research on developing reading skills and developing language ability is that you need to be exposed to a wide range of genres over time, right? And so this, this having a range of extensive reading choices, I think, is always very good.
Yeah, and I mean, a genre and just giving students agency in what they want to read, and I think it's empowering. And even having such shorter stories, I think you can find that kind of satisfaction in finishing something and understanding it, and then hopefully being motivated to click on something else, right? So
exactly, to click on something else, that's what we want. And that's actually something else I should say, is that one of the other aspects of our website is that we've graded the material initially by presence or absence of high frequency words. But what we've done and we realized is that vocabulary isn't everything. that there's a range of factors that contributes to the difficulty of reading a text. And so part of what we do at ER Central is that after students have read a book, after every single time they've read a story or a book, they're asked to rate it both for the interest level and also for the difficulty level. And based on the students' ratings, we make minor adjustments in the difficulty level of the text.
Yeah.
So over time, as more people use the website, the difficulty rating of the material becomes more accurate.
Good. Yeah, because in our previous interview with Rob Waring, he said not just the language, but how you're encouraging the student to make inferences can really affect how difficult a text is too.
So. Well, I don't know how many greater readers you've actually looked at closely. I've had to be a judge for the ERF Council for a couple of years. And so every year they'll give me 40 or 50 books, and you have to read them and rate them and rank them. And we vote on which is the best each year. And one of the things that was a very good activity to do. And what I found over the 3 or 4 years of doing that is I became aware of another set of factors that contributes to difficulty of a greater reader, completely independent of vocabulary. And that is the one for me that really stood out is the number of characters in the story.
Oh, yeah.
And so if you're reading like a graded version of a Shakespearean novel, you might have like 15 characters, and kids are lost by the second chapter, whereas an original story written specifically for second language learners might only have 3 to 5 characters and of the same age group and of the same cultural background and topics of interest, and those factors make the book much more salient and much more comprehensible. So there's the vocabulary is a very good starting point, but there are other factors as well.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was thinking the very syntax might cause problems. Yeah?
True.
Yeah.
I mean, exactly. There's the readability issues that you mentioned, like the background knowledge that they need to have. The number of characters, definitely, but the when you look exclusively at the language that you're using, you may know the words, but if you don't know the syntax, you
can be lost.
Yeah.
Completely. Yeah, exactly. Well, and most graded readers are controlled for grammar as well as vocabulary. That the starting point is vocabulary, but then and Rob is very expert in this, but if you're putting together a series of graded readers at like say 7 to 10 levels, then you're making decisions not only about what vocabulary authors are allowed to use, but also what syntax, what grammar they're allowed to use at level by level. And I think that's that really can help students as well if that's controlled.
Mm-hmm. Good.
Yeah.
Well, thank you. If there's anything we haven't covered that we'd like to talk about, but we really appreciate you introducing your background with ER and just the service that you've given to students and teachers for free through your website, ER Central.
Well, yeah. And all of my vocabulary lists are also free. Rob and I also have put together a series of free flashcard apps, to help people to learn my word lists and to learn other word lists as well. And so, basically what we're trying to do is to create, tools to help, not only learners, to help learners to learn English, but to help teachers to teach English, to help researchers to do good research on English, to help content writers to be able to write at level and to be able to write in a good way. And so basically the idea is to just enable as many people as possible. And, we both are on the presentation circuit at conferences, and that's just basically trying to spread the word about extensive reading, about high frequency vocabulary, and about all these tools that are available for people who, find this, they agree with us that these are important things to do in the classroom.
Well, thank you. Thank you. You said this is like your way to give back to the community, and that's very apparent. So,
well, Don, if it can be of use, I'm very happy.
Well, I have to say thanks to Professor Brown for doing this, and along with Rob Waring. That's great. And I hope plenty of people in our audience take advantage of this website.
Mm-hmm.
And I really, really enjoyed the discussion. And I think he makes a very good case for doing both intentional vocabulary learning, maybe through flashcards and spaced repetition, along with extensive reading.
Yeah, it's really important not to do one without the other. I think, at least for me personally, in my own study, I find it easier just to do the reading. And then I feel like the vocab work is more of the legwork that I'm less motivated to do. But it is motivating when you can roll through some flashcards and just see, you can see real progress. So
just in my own experience, like, I think from what I've read on acquisition of languages, I don't really believe in intentional learning. I'm more of an incidental learning guy. But then in my experience learning Japanese or trying to learn Japanese, I feel that I need that.
Yeah.
You know? So,
yeah.
So yeah, I would argue do both things. And
yeah, we'll include any links that we can find to the things he was talking about in our show notes. So please check it out there. Also, please, we'd love to hear from you. So if you have any comments or feedback, or you're interested in talking to us and getting in touch, please drop us a line. Either you can do that through our website, which is erpodcast.wordpress.com. You can leave a comment there on any episode that you want. Or shoot us an email. We are at exrpodcast@gmail.com.
That's right. We'll be looking forward to those comments and feedback.
Holding my breath.
Yeah. So, can we say it? Happy reading.
I messed it up once more. Happy reading.